Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, May 22nd. I'll begin today's reading on the front page. Man sought in alleged abduction try from Urbana. A rural Urbana neighborhood where a man allegedly attempted to abduct a 12-year-old girl in plain sight a day earlier was on guard Sunday night as authorities continued to search for an older white male driving a white van with tinted windows. I've got a 7-year-old granddaughter that rides her bike up and down the street, Kelly Ashby said, as darkness fell Sunday across Illinois Street from where five boys played basketball. I'm out here all the time watching her because the buses go down the street so fast. It could have happened to my granddaughter, and that rattles my nerves. Somebody trying to take the kids, that's just crazy, neighbor Jonathan Parker said. Kids are trying to be innocent, have fun, and enjoy their summer. For somebody to run around and snatch our kids is bad. Every parent's worst nightmare came dangerously close to more than a scare around 8 p.m. Saturday near the intersection of Glen Drive and East Illinois, several blocks to the northeast of Dr. Preston L. Williams Elementary in unincorporated Urbana. That's where two children, 12-year-old girl and a 12-year-old boy, were riding their bicycles when a man driving what was described as a panel van, typical of a work van with tinted windows and slight rust, came to a stop. According to accounts provided to the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, the man got out of the vehicle and began chasing the children on foot. The boy and girl abandoned their bikes and ran. The girl told authorities that the man got close enough to grab her arm, but she was able to pull away. The two children ran to the safety of a neighborhood home, and the man drove away. It was too close a call for many in the neighborhood. I have nieces who ride bicycles on this street, Caitlin Howard, an East Illinois Street resident, said on Sunday. When I heard about what happened here on Saturday, I brought them inside the house. It's not a good environment for the kids. From now on, when my nieces are outside, I'm going to be out there with them. By 4:45 p.m. Sunday, sheriff's deputies had conducted many interviews within the neighborhood and released details about the man wanted for alleged battery of a juvenile. He was described as having long, white or gray hair that's wrapped in a ponytail and a white-gray goatee. A witness also provided authorities with five of the seven digits on the Illinois license plate he was said to be driving, 156-blank-blank-03. In his only public comment about the incident Sunday, Jones said sheriff's deputies haven't been able to locate the man or the vehicle he was driving, leaving residents frightened and frustrated. It makes me wonder why somebody didn't take off after that man and run him off in the ditch until the cops could catch him. The lesson is something like this could happen anywhere. Unfortunately, this time it happened in this neighborhood. Linda Ashby has lived in the neighborhood for 50 years. She couldn't recall ever hearing about an incident like Saturday's, but acknowledged, "This neighborhood is a lot different from when I first moved here. 50 years ago, you weren't afraid to allow your kids to play outside. Now people drive crazy down the street." Anyone with information about the incident is asked to contact the Champaign County Sheriff's Office immediately at 217-333-8911 and request to speak with the deputy. Callers may also report information via Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. Troubled water, subdivision fighting sale of ponds to outsider from Champaign. Since they bought their home in northwest Champaign's Timberline Valley South, Oscar Gamble and his family have enjoyed lakefront living with access to fishing and kayaking on one of the subdivision's two lakes from their own backyard. Those days may be over for the Gambles, along with their neighbors with waterfront homes, who have all been left to wonder what to do next after something unprecedented happened in Champaign subdivision history. Both subdivision lakes were sold recently to the successful bidder in a county surplus property auction. A representative for the corporation that bought them has since thrown out possible ideas about using the lakes for a catfish farm and a fraternity's houseboat. He's also warned residents not to trespass on the lake properties. Gamble, who has lived in his home 12 years, wonders if the new owner is going to start charging him and his neighbors a fee to use the lake by his home, or if they'll be able to use it at all. My backyard goes right up to the lake. Then the county sells it out from under us for a drainage fee we never even knew about. The lakes wound up in a community auction by way of years' worth of legal processes following several years of unpaid drainage taxes, according to County Treasurer Dan Walsh. The taxes were being assessed by the County Fountainhead Drainage District, and the unpaid amounts totaled up to less than $300 on both lakes, though interest and fees were factored into the $648 minimum bid amount on each in the auction. The buyer of both lakes was a Delaware corporation calling itself Nasty Joe's, which scooped up the pair for just over $1,800. Brian Nastrus of Barrington, who identified himself as an accountant and representative of Nasty Joe's, said none of the homeowners in the subdivision have contacted him, though he's contacted one homeowner on each lake. Maybe they should call, he said. It's probably in their best interest, right? Meanwhile, he said, if they don't contact me, they're trespassing, and that includes any kind of structure. If they don't contact me, that's considered trespassing. Some residents believe Nastrus wants more than just a call. Jeff Decker, who lives along one of the lakes on Brittany Drive, said Nastrus called him and talked about maybe charging rents to use the lakes or selling them to the residents. Decker said he asked Nastrus what kind of price he'd have in mind, and Nastrus mentioned $100,000 to $200,000. Nastrus also told him he could put up abortion signs on his property to make people angry and could fill the lakes with recreation boats. Nastrus said residents knew the lakes were for sale and shouldn't be shocked. He told the News Gazette he was considering using the lakes for a fishing tournament, a catfish farm, or perhaps a houseboat as living quarters for fraternity members. The bottom line is there will be a remuneration for me for my investment. I just don't know what it'll be yet. Local officials said Timberline Valley South residents are in this situation because they don't have a homeowners association. Subdivision lakes, which are actually detention basins built for stormwater management, are typically under the control of homeowner associations. Part of the annual HOA fees homeowners pay help cover the cost to maintain them, along with whatever other stormwater management responsibilities each individual subdivision has. But when Timberline Valley South was established in 1996, just west of Parkland College, there wasn't a homeowners association formed, and efforts to form one later by some of the residents fell flat. When we purchased the property, we were told there was no homeowners association ever created, Gamble recalled. Gamble said individual property owners have kept up the lakes along their own property lines over the years. He recalled efforts to get an HOA started and would have paid an association fee. In fact, he said people along the lakes would have paid double, but people who didn't live on the lakes didn't see a benefit for themselves. We couldn't get it passed. Decker also recalled horror stories some people raised about HOAs making rules about what people could and couldn't do with their properties. I'd like to think that if it's let's just pay for the lake, people would have voted for it, but it's becoming an airing of complaints. The drainage taxes actually were paid for some years in this subdivision, and for both lakes they totaled just over $3 for both lakes, according to Welch. For the 2003-2007 tax years, the bills for $1.56 and $1.60 were being mailed to someone under the name Timberline Valley South Homeowners Association and were paid for some of those years, he said, though there apparently wasn't any such association. After that, Charles Miller of 606 Aaron Drive said he paid the bills for a couple of years in hope of saving the lakes for the subdivision, but he stopped after paying for the 2009 tax year. Miller said after efforts to form a homeowners association failed a second time, he concluded heck with it. He warned fellow homeowners if they wanted to continue owning the lakes, there would need to be a homeowners association formed. This goes back quite a while. There shouldn't be any surprises. Decker, a software engineer who lives along the same lake Gamble does, said he doesn't use it, but he's interested in what becomes of it. Personally, I don't go out on the lake, but I don't want somebody doing something weird or changing it. Decker said he spent days going to the city and county government offices earlier in the year trying to get answers about what was going on with the lakes, and it wasn't all that clear the lakes were for sale. He recalled seeing a for sale sign posted between a couple of houses, but it definitely wasn't like the lake is for sale. Welsh said some nearby property owners were notified with postcards about the auction to see if they wanted to bid on the drainage properties, and he acknowledged the for sale sign identified the property in assessor terminology and didn't say it's a lake. The truth is, if they had formed a homeowners association, this wouldn't have happened to them. Debbie Borg, a Timberline Valley South resident who doesn't live on one of the lakes, said she thinks the buyer is looking for a turnaround and quick profit, but there's no real buyer here. Head of the local neighborhood watch group, Borg said she's notified people who do live on the lakes that they need to learn what their rights are and take action. Borg also said the lakes aren't without their problems. The lake closest to her hasn't been dredged in the 16 years she's lived there, and some people are getting flooding in their backyards after very heavy rains. Plus, one of the lakes close to I-57 have muskrat problems. They have to pay to have someone trap and get rid of them. My thought was, can somebody tell us, can we sue this guy to make him dredge these lakes and make them presentable? Champaign Neighborhood Services Coordinator John Ruffin said this is the first time the city has run across the sale of a detention basin in one of its subdivisions, and research is underway to see if any other subdivisions are vulnerable. He also said residents in Timberline Valley South aren't facing this situation alone. We are with them, but we want to make sure any solution is a long-term solution. City officials are also looking into what the buyer can legally do with the detention lakes and what the best options are for homeowners. They plan to present more information at a public meeting the homeowners are being invited to attend on June 7th. For now, he can say the buyer can't do anything to the lakes that would disrupt their intended function of stormwater management. He also said it would be in the homeowner's best interest to form an HOA to negotiate with the lake's buyer. That's our ultimate goal, to form an HOA to negotiate with the new owner. These are sensitive negotiations. He's got plans for the lakes. The community has concerns about his intentions. Going out with a bang, honking, handprints, high fives, area seniors mark their departure. On the last day of last school year, Sam Lasarius and his fellow Champaign Central seniors piled into cars and drove laps around the University Avenue campus, laying on the horns in celebration of graduation. We were out there as soon as that bell rang. We were doing that for about 5 or 10 minutes until the police showed up and their presence tells us to go elsewhere. On Thursday, when Central releases its students for the school year, members of the class of 2017 will likely do the same thing, following a tradition that dates back as long as I've been here, according to Assistant Principal John Woods, a 20-year Maroons veteran. We certainly want them to be safe, that's for sure. As long as the students stay out of harm's way and aren't breaking any laws, the administration at Central is okay with this tradition being upheld. But another tradition, really more of a prank, isn't so warmly embraced. In recent years, Central students have taken to the halls in the final days of the school year, dropping piles of paper down the stairwell from the third floor. Get caught doing that this week, and the punishment could be as harsh as not being allowed to walk across the stage at graduation. That's really more like middle school behavior. That's been a recent thing, and I think it's more the younger kids. It's been a mainstay in the school for a while, said Lasarius, who just wrapped up his freshman year at Illinois Wesleyan, and acknowledges when you think about the janitors having to clean it up, it kind of sobers you up to it. As far as end-of-the-year pranks go in the area, what Lasarius described as the norm at Central is about as wild as it gets. Gone are the days of elaborate gags orchestrated by seniors that made life a nightmare for custodians. Kids these days, at least around here, are more considerate. Last week at Urbana Uni High, students took to the main hallway on the first floor, armed with small paintbrushes, and marked their territory on the walls. What started in 1972 in the school student lounge has spread, becoming a full-fledged organized tradition that has administrators' blessing. Students are allowed one spot on the wall, 8 inches by 11 inches, where they can paint their handprint or any other mark they'd like to leave, within reason, of course. The students used to do it on their own in the student lounge, and it's grown now and spread all over the school, said Uni Advancement Director Mary Ann Downey, who has overseen the painting of the walls for the last 6 years. On Tuesday, Downey supervised a group of students who climbed ladders and painted their handprints in the hallway after school. Senior Martin Grossman went with one of the more elaborate designs, an Argentina soccer jersey with his hand being used as arms and legs coming out of the jersey. The designs have evolved at Uni over the years, from simply handprints with students' names in graduation years to what Grossman came up with. I had a soccer injury, a fracture in my back. I'm going to draw all the vertebrae and one of them will be red. Classmate Tori Aber has been thinking about her handprint since the day she set foot inside the school and saw all the markings on the walls. She had a slam dunk of an idea last year, until she forgot it. I've had a couple of ideas go through my head the past week or two. I just came up with my design today. My hand is navy, and I'm going to do a wave on my thumb, and I'm going to put a boat on it. Some recent events involving seniors at schools have been so well received that they're already thought of as traditions. Last year, Tuscola's administration started one that involved the graduating seniors walking through the halls of the town's elementary and junior high schools, slapping hands with the students who line each side of the hallways. Like any good idea, we take it from someone else, Tuscola High School Principal Brad Allen said. There were some other districts throughout the nation that were recognizing their graduates that way, and we thought it was a great idea. Our elementary kids love it, our junior high kids love it, and our graduates have really taken to it. Afterward, the seniors posed for a photo with the graduating kindergarten students in front of North Ward Elementary School. It was great to see all the little kids, and you think back to the memories you have of when you were their age, thinking about the stuff they'll go through that was similar for you. I always like seeing upperclassmen, and you always aspire to be them. Fisher started a similar tradition last year, too, with its seniors walking through the halls and greeting the younger students. Something else happened this year that caught outgoing Principal Tom Schallenberger by surprise when he arrived to school last Wednesday morning. When seniors were dismissed for the final time of day earlier, many of them took erasable markers and penned messages on the windows all around the school. Ones like Peace Out and Bye Felicia, 2017, and We Did It. This is a senior thing. They're not very good at keeping secrets, and Assistant Principal John Kelly and I thought it was that if that's the worst thing they do, it's not a big deal. I drove around to make sure everything written was appropriate, and it was. At Westville, some seniors came up with the idea to pretend they were sleeping in the school's hallways when teachers and students arrived for school last week. They came in the day before and asked if they could do that, and I okayed it, Principal Guy Goodlove said. What I like about it is that they had enough respect for the school and the teachers to come and ask first. It wasn't a harmful prank. It wasn't malicious. Didn't damage any school property. It was something they wanted to have fun with. The teachers enjoyed it, the students enjoyed it, and everybody had a good laugh. During Matthew Stark's 4 years at Urbana High, there haven't been any pranks leading up to graduation, but he had to deal with some funny business during homecoming week his first year. They did some vandalism to the school, so some seniors lost homecoming dance and homecoming game privileges. They all still walked at graduation. Usually you don't see much around this time of year because kids who do things might not get to walk at graduation. There hasn't been anything, and I hope nothing starts. A long-standing tradition at Urbana is for seniors to take a class trip. It's been going on for decades, according to Stark, with past destinations including Wisconsin Dells and Florida. On Saturday, Stark accompanied 61 Urbana seniors on a trip to Six Flags Great America in Gurnee. The worst prank Todd Wilson remembers in his 10 years at Rantoul is a stink bomb going off inside the building early on. There's no more of that. We set expectations and let them know that even though they're on their way out, there are still 600 other kids who need to finish strong. On Thursday, Rantoul seniors upheld a tradition of holding a picnic at nearby Wabash Park, where a variety of food is served along with games. They either order pizza or some parents will help and set up smokers and bring the kids something. They'll have some games out there. Sometimes they'll bring inflatables. Grads exit with fond memories. University Laboratory High School rocked with Prince and ABBA, while Judah Christian had a reverent tone with religious songs. But both marked the bittersweet joy of graduation on Saturday with the end of an epoch for the seniors. The graduates all spoke after the ceremonies about how they will miss friends who are heading to different schools and states but are excited about the future. Tuscola High School also held its graduation on Saturday and several more yesterday. The sun peeked out just as Judah Christian finished its graduation ceremonies, and Nick Stone was basking in the light and the day. A multi-sport athlete, Stone was especially grateful for his friends during his time at Judah, where he started as a preschooler. "There are 13 of us who have gone all the way through to graduation together. It's been our whole lives," said Stone of Champaign, who will move on to the University of Illinois to study business. Volleyball standout Emma Cottrell agreed that her favorite memories were of her fellow graduates. "I'll always remember all the friends, all the years." Another favorite memory, English class. She'll study literature at Illinois Wesleyan. In the valedictorian speech, Emily Black said, "The past years have been a whirlwind. I've been blessed by this place and will not leave unchanged," she said, learning an important lesson in the love of God. The guest speaker was well known to some of the graduates, former athletic director Brian Mead. Now that he has his doctorate, next year's entering class will know him as the high school principal. Mead said he's really bonded with the graduating students at Judah's senior trip to Puerto Rico. Later Saturday afternoon, Uni High held its own ceremony at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. The commencement address was delivered by Elizabeth Madras, the executive teacher in the Department of English, who opened it with a few minutes of The Velveteen Rabbit, a story that mixes love and change. In recognition of the brightness of many uni students, she noted that the classic was below your reading level, but it touched many of the graduates. After the ceremony, Sam Chow said he'll miss uni. "It was 5 years, the end of an era," he said, "but he'll stay in town studying computer science at the U of I." And from the local page, an article by Tom Kasich, "County Poor Farm Preceded Nursing Home." The possible sale, transfer, or even closure of the financially struggling Champaign County Nursing Home is another step in the evolution of a property that began with a poor farm more than 150 years ago. And no, this isn't the first time a social service on the county property in East Urbana has run into money problems. The nursing home's future is unsettled after county voters last month rejected a tax increase to support it and voted for a ballot question calling for its sale or disposal. Meanwhile, the company that has managed the nursing home for several years will leave on June 30th, and the county is looking both for a new manager for the home and a broker to market its sale. There's also a possibility, a slight one, that some sort of non-for-profit group could be assembled to take over the operation of the county-owned facility. First, though, there was a county poor farm from about 1865 to 1951. Poor farms were common among county governments, and Champaign counties began on 120 acres that now includes several other county buildings such as the highway department, satellite jail, nursing home, animal control facility, and Brookins Administrative Center. The idea was to provide a home for the county's poor, sick, mentally ill, and old, and to cover its costs with the operation of a farm. As recently as 1941, according to an insurance company inventory, the poor farm was an efficient enterprise with a dairy barn, stock barn, two hog houses, poultry house, corn crib, machine shed, slaughterhouse, and two railroad boxcars that served as storage buildings for grain. There also were four horses, 22 head of cattle, 100 hogs, and innumerable poultry. The operation of the farm, along with a community hospital for the needy that was supported by a handful of township governments, began to run into financial problems in 1949. That's when the charge of $5 a day for care at the hospital was raised to $6 a day. It had been $3.50 a day in 1947. And the cost of care at the county farm went from $68 to $74 a month. Most of those costs were borne by townships and the State Public Aid Commission. By 1951, citing its unprofitable operation, the county shut down the county farm. The community hospital was closed 2 years later. "We have tried everything to make it a sound operation," said Glenn White, the City of Champaign Township supervisor, who, as such, was on the County Board of Supervisors. "But through it all, it is apparent that the institution is just not a profitable operation, and there is no great need for the hospital." White added that the hospital is being subsidized from county corporate funds and has been long in the red. Those are the same arguments being made today with the nursing home, that it is being subsidized by the county's general fund and that the subsidy has to end before the general fund is put at risk. The county hospital facilities, along with the 1910 structure built for the Poor Farm, were converted in 1951 to become a county nursing home. The home made a modest profit during many years of operation, although even in the 1950s and 60s, there were complaints about state aid to the facility. In 1958, the county board passed a resolution in which it agreed to take over the payment for drugs and local medical providers for nursing home residents. It cited miles of red tape by the public aid department. There are similar complaints today about state delays in processing Medicaid applications, delayed Medicaid payments, and denials of Medicaid applications. In 2016, according to a recent report to the county board, the nursing home had to write $380,000 in Medicaid applications and redeterminations as a loss. Meanwhile, a facility built to accommodate as many as 243 residents has never had that many. In April, it had an average daily census of 141. And from Thomasboro Town, Nix's celebration over weather. Saturday's Thomasboro Community Celebration had been called off due to the forecast of bad weather. "We are very sorry that we had come to this decision, but felt that for the safety of our vendors, participants, and everyone's products and such, it is the best decision." Paul Kunduff said the committee will meet to decide if the celebration will be rescheduled. "It is very possible that we will not be holding the daytime events this year." Kunduff said the committee plans to met at 4 p.m. on Saturday to decide how to proceed. He said while the celebration contract states there will be no refunds, the committee has decided that it is Mother Nature's fault, so we will be sending refunds. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, May 22nd. Please stay tuned.